Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to our Standing Watch program. Today, I'd like to take you on a chronological journey regarding events pertaining to Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and Donald Trump, and to show you how it all comes together. And I'd like to start with the Hunter Biden plea deal, that sweetheart plea deal. And it's important to remember the dates. Because on Wednesday, July 26, Hunter Biden was supposed to plead guilty to two misdemeanor tax counts of willful failure to pay federal income tax as part of a plea deal between the prosecution and the defense to avoid jail time on a felony gun charge, because Hunter Biden had asked for a gun, had filed an application, and he had not revealed that he was a drug addict at the time, which is a felony, which normally gets you in jail when you do that. Now, the plea deal was supposed to be approved by the judge, except the judge didn't do it. The New York Editorial Post wrote on July 27, "With the text of Hunter Biden's plea deal now public, it is no longer possible to deny that the Justice Department's been bending over backwards to protect the Biden family, including President Joe Biden. The United States agrees not to criminally prosecute Hunter Biden for any federal crimes related to the case," the deal reads. It left only the possibility of prosecution for any future conduct. Now, when the judge questioned this immunity clause, the deal fell apart. The article goes on to say, "The president's son pleaded not guilty to federal tax and gun charges, opening the door for the possibility of additional charges in the future, such as the allegedly working as an unregistered foreign agent." Hunter Biden admitted during the hearing he had received hundreds of thousands of dollars from a Chinese Communist Party-backed company, contradicting President Biden's claims that his family never made money from China. Now, what is particularly shocking to me about the Hunter Biden sweetheart plea deal is that the prosecution and the defense attorneys reportedly tried to hide the immunity clause in an attachment, which was dealing with a gun charge, which was allegedly given to the judge on the day of the hearing, not before, with the apparent hope that the judge would not even read it and that she would sign off on the deal. Now, it will remain to be seen whether the judge who has given the parties leave to amend the documents will ultimately sign off on the deal or the documents, because some scholars have already suggested that she would. Now, Fox News legal analyst Greg Jarrett even expressed on TV his fear that the immunity clause will be removed from the written documentation, but a secret verbal understanding between the prosecution and Hunter Biden's attorneys will be reached to the effect that no further charges against Hunter Biden will be brought, while claiming that investigations are ongoing so that Congress would have no access to uncovered information pending investigation. Now, that seems almost too bizarre to contemplate. Breitbart wrote on July 27 about something which happened one day after Hunter Biden's sweetheart plea deal fell apart, which fell apart on July 26, as you will recall. Now, on Thursday, July 27, Special Counsel Jack Smith brought new charges against former President Donald Trump and others in the Mar-a-Lago White House documents case. Smith charged Trump with one count of willful retention of national defense documents and two counts of obstruction. Now, Trump denied all charges and said he will continue to run as presidential nominee and then as president, even if he were convicted and sentenced. Questions were raised in the media whether he could actually pardon himself once he was elected president, a question which doesn't seem to be addressed in the Constitution. So, it was also pointed out that if he were to do so, it would be very difficult to challenge this. Because for one reason, who would even have legal standing to bring a case like that in a court, challenging that pardoning situation? Now, before I go on, we have to interject some ongoing developments pertaining to President Biden. Law professor and Democrat, I like to emphasize this, Democrat, Jonathan Turley, wrote the following on July 19 in the New York Post. Hunter wrote in a WhatsApp message to a Chinese business associate, "I am sitting here with my father, and we would like to understand why the commitment made has not been fulfilled. Tell the director that I would like to resolve this now before it gets out of hand, and now means tonight. And Z, if I get a call or text from anyone involved in this other than you or the chairman, I will make certain that between the man sitting next to me and every person he knows and my ability to forever hold a grudge, that you will regret not following my direction. I am sitting here waiting for the call with my father." Within 9 days or so, lots of money was received from China. The article goes on to say, "Joe Biden has repeatedly told the American people that he never discussed any of Hunter's deals and had no knowledge of such deals. He has maintained that denial as evidence has mounted contradicting him. Even when he flew his son to China, where Hunter cut lucrative deals, he insists that they never mentioned that deal. There are also repeated references to President Biden as the big guy in emails who was to receive a 10% cut on a deal with the Chinese, as well as other benefits. There are other references to Hunter Biden paying portions of his father's expenses and taxes. According to one report, Hunter Biden complained to his sister that he had to pay his dad half of what he was getting." The article continues. "There are also the disclosures that Biden met with at least 14 of Hunter's business associates from the U.S., Mexico, Ukraine, China, and Kazakhstan over the course of his vice presidency. And then there is the audio tape message from President Biden for Hunter that specifically discussed coverage of those dealings. Finally, there is another audio tape of his uncle, Jim Biden, telling Hunter that he and his father had discussed his collapsing financial position and could arrange a safe harbor." So far, the comments by law professor Jonathan Turley. The Daily Mail wrote on July 31. Now, this is important. That is now Monday, July 31, that Hunter Biden's business partner, Devin Archer, told Congress in bombshell testimony the Biden brand helped Ukraine firm Burisma from going bankrupt, and revealed Joe Biden was on the phone at least 20 times while his son was talking with foreign associates. Now, there is disagreement as to what was actually discussed during these phone conversations, but the point remains, 20 times Joe Biden talked to Hunter Biden's associates on the phone. The article by the Daily Mail continues. Archer testified that the Burisma executive and the owner of Burisma put constant pressure on Hunter in 2015 to get his father to fire prosecutor Viktor Shokin, who was investigating Burisma. In March 2016, Joe Biden threatened to withhold $1 billion in aid to Ukraine if Shokin was not fired for corruption. Soon thereafter, Shokin was fired. Now remember, Hunter Biden worked for Burisma, which was accused of bribery, from 2013 to April of 2019, earning millions of dollars as board member and attorney. He received $1 million a year, but in 2017, his salary was cut in half, 2 months after Joe Biden ceased to be vice president, according to an article by the New York Post dated May 26, 2021. Archer also testified that Joe Biden had at least two dinners with Hunter's foreign business associates from Russia and China, who sent money to a firm run by Hunter Biden and Archer. Now, one day after Archer's testimony on Tuesday, August 1, this happened. One day after Archer's testimony. Now, this happened on August 1. Fox News wrote on August 1. Trump was indicted on 4 counts: conspiracy to defraud the United States, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, obstruction of and attempt to obstruct an official proceeding, and conspiracy against rights. About the conspiracy against rights, I will have some comments in a few moments. Now, this was a 45-page indictment. I got it right here. I read it through. I marked it up. In this 45-page indictment, it was alleged about 50 times the way I counted it, insofar as Trump's comments on the 2020 election was concerned, that Trump made those statements which were false, and he knew them to be false. That's pretty much the basis of this indictment. Now, the article by Fox News continued. Professor Turley explained that special counsel Jack Smith might be yielding to his weakness with the indictment. Jack Smith, Turley says, has a reputation for stretching criminal statutes beyond the breaking point. He went after former Virginia Republican Governor Bob McDonnell and secured a conviction there. He was unanimously overturned by the Court of Appeal because he just stretched the law too far. He also used the words, it's a bridge too far, what Jack Smith did now. Turley also said that this is a free speech killing indictment. I have rarely seen a more chilling filing by the Department of Justice. The indictment basically just says that we think Trump is lying, that he actually didn't believe this. I can't tell you how facetiously ridiculous this claim is, he said. And I would agree. I mean, every time you hear Trump, he always tries to go back to the 2020 election and the events. And even his own advisors are telling him, don't do it. You are not really helping the Republicans. But he wants to do it because he's obviously convinced as to what he's saying. So to claim that he is purposefully lying, that he was purposefully lying when he made those claims, those statements, it's just beyond credibility. Turley also said, to go on here, that Trump's comments were protected by the First Amendment. Fox News host Jesse Waters said, the indictment appears to relitigate claims of election fraud in 2020 in Pennsylvania, Arizona, Nevada, and Michigan. Waters quipped that Democrats might not want to go back down the road of defending the integrity of the election system in Philadelphia. Now, Trump has repeatedly claimed Vice President Pence had the authority to send the elector slates back to the state legislatures under the Electoral Count Act of 1887. Former New York federal prosecutor Andy McCarthy suggested that no matter how frivolous, these comments are likely protected speech. It was something that Trump was allowed to rely on. Here are attorneys telling him that that is a law he relies on, those comments. Now, actually, other legal experts are saying that the Electoral Count Act of 1887 did in fact come to play in this case. But we are not done yet. CNBC wrote on August 1, An attorney for Trump said that they will use the charges to relitigate every single issue in the 2020 election in the context of this litigation. The case gives Trump, and the attorney says, an opportunity that he has never had before, which is to have subpoena power since January 6 in a way that can be exercised in federal court. When I heard about this indictment, even before I was able to read it, I felt right away that Jack Smith has opened a Pandora's box. Because Trump will undoubtedly try to litigate or re-litigate the question on the merits, whether his statements regarding the events pertaining to the 2020 election were false, and whether he knew them to be false. That's a charge. Because, you see, many times cases were dismissed by courts, these many cases which Trump brought, not necessarily on the merits, but because of procedural grounds, that there was no standing, there was false jurisdiction, there was the statute of limitations which had run, etc. The underlying question is also here in this case, whether a person can even be criminally prosecuted for conduct while in the office of the presidency. Many feel no, that cannot be. I mean, impeachment in Congress would be what needs to be done. And of course, it has never, ever happened before. Secondly, whether his statements are constitutionally protected as free speech, and therefore they would be immune from criminal prosecution. Still not done yet. Because NPR wrote on August 1, one count of conspiracy against rights refers to Trump and his co-conspirators' alleged attempts to, quote, oppress, threaten, and intimidate people in their right to vote in an election. The charge of conspiracy against rights goes back to the Civil War era. It was passed after the Civil War was a way to stop members of the Ku Klux Klan and other criminal organizations from intimidating, harassing, and outright terrorizing black voters, especially in the South. Now, that law was part of the Enforcement Act, passed between 1868 and 1870, as we could clearly see, should be able to clearly see, and this is also confirmed by many legal experts. That law does nothing. It has nothing to do, nothing remotely to do with Trump's alleged conduct. And there's still more. WND, or World Net Daily, wrote on August 3. Harvard Law Professor Alan Dershowitz, who is also a Democrat, who said very clearly, I've never voted for Trump and I'm not going to, but he said that Special Counsel Jack Smith could himself be indicted if the indictment of former President Donald Trump is thrown out. Let me explain to you why, he said. The statute says the following regarding conspiracy. Two or more persons conspire to injure and deny somebody the free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege secured him by the Constitution. What if a court ultimately rules that Donald Trump had a right under the First Amendment to make his January 6th speech and do what he did? Then Jack Smith will have conspired to deny him of that right. That is how serious this is. And then he goes on to say, Jack Smith deliberately, willfully, and maliciously leaves out the words that President Trump spoke on January 6th in his terrible speech, which I disagree with, Dershowitz is saying, but this is what Trump said. I want you to assemble peacefully and patriotically. Jack Smith leaves that out. That is a lie, an omission lie, and you are going to indict somebody for telling lies. Don't tell lies in the indictment yourself. That's how hypocritical this is, Dershowitz concluded. Now, he also said that Jack Smith could be indicted for that omission lie. He said, well, it's not going to happen, but theoretically he could be. Dershowitz also said this. The Supreme Court has said in an opinion by Chief Justice William Rehnquist under the First Amendment There is no such thing as a false opinion or a false idea. That's something you learn in the first semester in law school. Everybody knows that. Opinions are not actionable. Goes on to say, this is a very, very dangerous indictment. Dangerous to the First Amendment and also dangerous to the Sixth Amendment because it directly goes after Trump's lawyers, names them as co-conspirators without giving their names, but basically says that they are criminals for giving him advice on how to challenge the election. Now that's how ridiculous this entire indictment is. But I don't want to conclude this presentation without pointing out, which is really very remarkable and interesting in this context. And that's an article by the Washington Examiner, which was written on July 29, even before Devin Archer's testimony and subsequent Jack Smith's indictment. The article says, a new poll conducted by Rasmussen Reports confirmed what many voters say to each other, we are doomed. The interesting twist on the survey is that the answer is more indicative of the country's political tribalism than any particular candidate's character or platform. 82%, let me repeat this, 82% of the country thinks we are doomed if President Joe Biden or former President Donald Trump is re-elected president in 2024. This breaks down to 40% of likely U.S. voters agreeing that the country is doomed unless Biden is re-elected. Conversely, 42% of voters felt that Trump must win in 2024 or the United States is doomed. The poll reveals that many people in the country already knew. We are a country divided. And this is a division which is not going to be cured. And as many have said already, it will unavoidably and inevitably lead to civil war. We are destroying ourselves from the inside. And then an outside power will come in and take over. Who is that outside power? Our free booklet, The Rise and Fall of Germany and Europe, tells you more about who is that outside power and what is going to happen to the United States. Please ask for a free copy. Until next time, this is Norbert Link for the Standing Watch program.